Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here in the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Today's book is the third book in a series. The series is called Riddlemaster, with the first book being Riddlemaster of Head, and this book is The Harpist in the Wind, which is book three in the Riddlemaster series, by Patricia A. McKillip. Now, here's the thing that I always talk about when I'm reviewing a third book in a series. How much do I want to talk about this book versus how much do I want to talk about the series? Because the people who read the first two books are coming to this and going, well, what happened in this book? How did you enjoy it? I read it too. Tell me all about it. However, they've got lots of listeners and I don't want to talk too much about what happened in this book because even just setting up what happened in this book kind of gives away what happens in the previous book, or in this case, previous two books. So it's quite a tricky one to talk about. But what I want to do, I think, is just kind of wrap up my thoughts about the series in general. If you've listened to the previous two podcasts that I did, I think I did one in March and then another one in, say, June. Actually, I can just look up here. When did I do them? Yeah. Oh, no. One in March. One at the end of March and one at the end of May. Now, here we are in August. I've done the Riddlemaster of Head. I've done the Heir of Sea and Fire. And now we have Harpist in the Wind. Now, what I really enjoyed about this series is a lot of the writing. If you remember back to that first episode that I did about the Riddlemaster of Head, I talked about how I listened to the audiobook all the way through, finished, and then pretty much immediately went back to the start and listened to it all the way through again. Now, I didn't need to do that so much with the second book, because in the second book, it's kind of a much more of a straightforward story. The language is a lot more simple, and the, you know, because you got like a hold of what's going on in the world, you kind of know the geography of the world, you know how the magic works a bit, and you've got a different character, and you're kind of just kind of filling in with this other character, Raedel, who was kind of mentioned in the first book as maybe a love interest. And in the second book, they're like, hey, are these two guys. Is Raedel and Morgan going to get together? And I don't want to give too much about that away about that, but well, I guess I can just say yes. This is kind of like a fairy story, fantasy book, and it is a romance story as well. So there is that romantic element in it. And now this third book, they're both together again, and it was one of those books where I was like, I'd listen to a chapter, and then I go, right, I've just got to go back and listen to that chapter again. And it's not because the writing is unclear as such; it's because there's so much going on with the writing that you want to listen to all the descriptions of things and the way the turns of phrases and all the great quotes and the ways that the characters interact with each other. But there's so much other stuff going on that, I mean, this is a book called The Riddle Master, and riddles in these books aren't just sort of like, hey, I'm gold on the inside and I'm an egg or whatever it is in the kind of riddle battles that you get in, say, The Hobbit. It's much more of like, I'm going to give you a little fact and you've got to explain the history behind that. I'm going to give you this, like, name this little thing that happened and you've got to talk about why that character would do something in history. So Riddlemaster is very much based on what the history is. And it turns out that this book or this trilogy is very much based around that idea that we're going to give you a character, we're going to give you a moment, and you've got to work out, you as the character in the book, but also you as the reader of this book, you've kind of got to elaborate on and kind of work out what's going on there and kind of explain why that's important or why it's interesting or why this person is being brought up in this situation. So it's weird to read a series of books and which is also a riddle in and of itself. And I always enjoy, well, I say I always enjoy, I always really admire someone who goes into a story with such a clear idea of how to make the book unclear for people who are reading it. And then when it pays off, it really pays off. I mean, that's another series that I've read, the first book, which was Nine Fox Gambit, where I was like, oh, I really love the idea that someone is going to obfuscate what's going on in the book in a way which is, you know, sort of like, and then the book explains within one chapter, actually, this is what I'm doing. In that book, it was like, oh, I'm using board games and I'm changing the rules and doing all this kind of stuff. And if you read the book as though it is a board game and let it affect your reading habits and do that way, you'll get to the bottom of this book and enjoy it on that extra level. And this book does that too, or this series does that too as well, with the idea of riddles. feels. Like, we're constantly being, things are being revealed, we're constantly, questions are being asked of us as readers, and it's not, the riddles aren't all answers. We have to do work to answer those riddles for ourselves, myself, and that's what I had to do. So when I got to the end of a chapter, or I'd go back and listen to a section again just to go, all right, am I actually getting what's going on here? Now, this works. It works in a great way to make a book more interesting as a reading experience, but again, it's one of those things that I enjoy the idea of it, and I enjoy like half of the experience of it more than I do, is this actually a good way to tell a story? Now, in some cases, like Nine Fox Gambit, I think it does pay off spectacularly, and it becomes sort of like one of my favourite books of the year, 5-star book, and I'm like, yeah, this is just amazing. It rewired my brain in a way that very few books can rewire my brain. Whereas this book, I'm going, like, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I love the writing, and I love the idea, but I think in the end, the story isn't actually complex enough to make me go through this thing. I mean, the payoff at the end of this book, at the end of this three books, the end of this series, is, in the end, I know it's weird to say this, but it is kind of like, oh, farm boy who is from a lowly country town, and sure, he's the prince of Head, but, you know, Head is the most unimaginative of lands, and, you know, out country bumpkin kind of prince thing. And at the end of it, he gains more powers and gains more power and gains more magic and gains more respect and goes on adventures, and in the end is going to become, you know, the big, powerful, they're going to save the day, the one who's prophesied and all that kind of stuff. In the end, if that's the story that we're telling, I appreciate the different way that this is told, but overall, the story wasn't up to the same level as the writing. And unfortunately, the characters that we spend time with, while interesting, aren't really worth, like, there's nothing special enough about them to spend as much time traveling with. Not time traveling, but spending time along the travels of these 2, 3, 4 characters who we spend a lot of time with. Morgan of Head is a little bit whiny, and I know I want someone who's strong, but whiny has, you have to be, if you're going to be whiny, you've got to be really interesting, or the story has to be really interesting, and I can then put up with someone who's a bit whiny. Morgan of Head's whininess doesn't, it's not outweighed by the complexity or the interest in the other characters or the rest of his character and the story. I enjoy that, like, the complexity of some of the relationships he has with other characters. For example, as I mentioned before, there is a romance element in this. And the second book isn't told from Morgan's point of view. It's told from the woman he's promised to. It's sort of like, if you solve this riddle and get out of this tower, you'll get the hand in marriage of the second most beautiful woman in Arn. And you're like, okay, who's this second most beautiful woman in Arn? And the whole second book we spend with Riddell, again, I'm just remembering the pronunciations from the audiobook here, and she's got, you know, powers and magic backstories, and she's got their own riddles about her own life that she's got to work out, and she does that through the second book. And then this third book, they get together, and it's sort of like, yay, the lovers are back together, and it's all going to be great, but in the end, their relationship's kind of like, oh, this is what happens, like, at the end of a fairy story, like, yes, the prince and the princess get together in this beautiful relationship, and they've loved each other for a long time, but they couldn't be together because she was promised to someone else, and he thought, well, she'll never be together with me because I'm just the guy from Head, and she's the sophisticated thing, and she'll never come and live in my castle with me. And then they kind of get together, and they get on, but it's sort of like, oh yes, I love you, and it's sort of like, and then there's this, the way that Morgan looks at somebody else, I'm like, hey, he should be with this other woman over here. She wasn't promised to him, that she's not a princess and all that kind of thing, but he's obviously got eyes for somebody else, and that other person has got eyes for him. And you're like, why don't these two people get, maybe they can all get together. Maybe they can just have, well, not a threesome, but like a three-way relate, you know. Anyway, it's one of those things where you just get, all right. So at the end of the fairy story, there is more to go there. So yeah, that's interesting. Let me have a look at my notes. I realized I made not very many. Oh, so what I really like about this book. Now, here's what I said. there isn't a lot of complexity in the story, but in this book, the riddles that we've been riddling with, like who are the shape changers? Where has the high one gone? Like who is this character there? What's important about this relationship here? All of those things are paid off in this book. We do get the end to the end of all the riddles, and a lot of the magic, which is a little bit vague, and to be honest, stays vague all the way through to the end, which I don't mind. You know, a lot of that is then explained, like, why is it in the book? In the first book, we read about the land rule, which I really enjoy, which is, like, whoever is the king or the ruler of the of this nation or this island or this land has, like, a mental or empathic relationship with the land that they're on. So they kind of understand what the land wants and what the land needs, like the physical land. Like, oh, this forest is hurting. We need to look after this forest this way. Oh, we're actually, reaping too many crops from here. We're overplanting there. We're building too much here. Oh, actually, we need to do some more cultivation over here. There's going to be flooding in that area. And all that kind of stuff is built in to the land ruler. They have the land rule passes, so if somebody dies, the land rule gets passed down onto the next of kin, and that's how you can kind of tell who's related to who's in these royal families in some ways. And at the start of the book, I was just like, oh, that's kind of a quirky thing. Whereas by the end of this series, you're like, oh, right, that's why it kept on being mentioned, the land rule, because there's actually a lot of other powerful magic involved in that way that that can be tapped into that if you know what to do. And that happens a lot of the times, along with the stars, with the star bearer and the harping and all that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, right, that's why that's important. And it all comes together. Now, this isn't all always on the surface. A lot of that stuff is still kind of like hidden behind some riddles in that way, and you kind of got to tease it out what's actually going on here. But that's cool. And also, like I say, some of the relationships and some of the twists, I was like, well, I was kind of suspecting that twist in the first book, and then you know, two-thirds of the way through this book, or three-quarters of the way through this book, it's paid off, and you're like, okay, I probably didn't need to wait three novels or two and a half novels to get the answer to exactly that, but sure, let's go with it. But yeah, I do like the payoff of a lot of these different things, all the different magics, and also it is quite epic. This is, like, I guess you could call, you know, traditional fantasy, but it is epic fantasy. It's also, like, romantic fantasy and traditional fantasy. I don't know what to say, but there are, you know, epic scale magic things happening and epic scale battles, even though a lot of them, well, some of them are happening off screen and a lot of them never really come to it. I realize this book is often about people traveling to do something. I know it's kind of trite to say it, but the stuff that happens along the way is more important. The journey is more important than the destination. But often in these books, they'll get somewhere and they'll be like, oh, everyone's gone. Oh, well, I guess it's just me. But all the things that happen along the way. And the writing style is so crazy in that way, is that it never fills you in on what's, like, time span goes past. Like, in one paragraph, it'll be just like, oh, yeah, and then that happened, and that happened, and then 3 months later, this is this and this. And then you just skip on, and you're like, oh, shit, we're 3 months have gone by. What's everybody else been doing in that 3 months? And you kind of, later on, you kind of catch up with some people, and this person's been doing this, and this person's been doing this. But you've just got to not, you've got to pay so much attention, because you can just change, like, a cast of characters will just be, like, halfway through a paragraph, they'll just leave, and then you'll move on, and the conversation will start elsewhere. Or you'll be in one location and like, oh yeah, and then he changed into bird and went here and then shapeshifted this way and that way. And you're like, whoa, go back a bit. So again, that's another reason why you can kind of go back. Like, I was going back and listening to some of these chapters or half chapters or sections of this book. Again, just like, all right, just got to go back 15 minutes in the audiobook and get that again, just to make sure that I've got everything straight, which in some ways is rewarding. But other times it can be just like, oh man, if I had like a map, or if I had, like, you know, at the start of each chapter, just say, all right, now he's this place, and or now we're with this character in this place. And then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, draw the line around the map to make sure that you're not confused, or say, right, now this much time has passed, because a lot of that stuff just passes by in the middle of a paragraph or, like, in a short connecting sentence, and you're just like, whoa, wait a second, what else is in my notes? Also, one tricky thing that I have, and I guess this comes down to listening to an audiobook version as well, is that a lot of the names are quite similar. I think I saw someone mention this on Goodreads. Maybe see if I can find that Goodreads review. Let me have a look. Yeah, someone else mentions there is actually a People and Places glossary at the back of the book, but somebody else actually wrote down a whole list of different things. Oh, I can't see it now. But it is one of those things where you just go, and there's Anne and Arn and Orn, and there's a character called Morgon, and then there's another character called the Morgol. So sometimes the Morgol meets up with the Morgon, and there's Gistel Wicklome, the founder, and then there's lots of these other... There's Irith and Iris and Head and Had and Arn and Orm and Oom. No, I can't see the... Maybe it's this review. Oh yeah, here it is. Kathleen rated it 4 stars. She says, as with many fantasies, invented names for characters and places are hard to differentiate and remember via audio. There's An, Orm, Om, El, If, Nun, Tel, Tor, Head, Ha, Rude, Rourke, Imris, Irith, etc. So I referred to a very helpful website called Wizly.com, Riddlemaster, which I didn't look at. But yeah, I just thought that was funny because I was looking through reviews trying to find the names. Like, what's that name? Gistel Wicklome? And I find that going to Goodreads, people say, oh, there's this character and this character and this character. I'm like, oh, great. I would never remember those names from the audiobook. And this book, because it's a fantasy book, is got all that kind of stuff. An, Om, Arm... Tel Tor, Head Ha, Rude, Rourke, Imris, Irith, gets pretty tricky. Again, another reason why it's satisfying to go back and listen to it again or reread or get everything out of the book. But in some ways, you're just like, oh, man, I wish it was just a little bit more clear. But then, I guess if it was a little bit more clear, it wouldn't be called the Riddle Master series. It would just be called, you know, generic fantasy story about farm boy becoming wizard and godlike powers by the end of it. And you're like, no, we need this extra layer here. So, yes, that is the end of my notes. Overall, I very much enjoyed this series. I really enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed that the middle book suddenly just goes, well, this is set a year later and this character's disappeared, so let's have another character just go and find that character, which I thought was very satisfying. And then for it to come back, I wish, though, that Red Earl had a little bit more payoff, her story had a little more payoff in this third book, because, again, she's got her own, like, massive... you know, prophetic magic backstory that we should be learning more about, and we should be spending more time with her, hereditary stuff going on. Don't want to go too much into it, but kind of I wanted a little bit more of that in this book. She seemed to just be more of a traveling companion, and not so much like an antagonist, but like a problem that Morgon had to deal with is in this book. And I kind of wanted her to have a little bit more payoff at the end of this 3-book story, considering that the middle book was her story. But overall, this is a good end to a good series. I do have some issues with the story being, for the complexity of finding out what happened in the story itself isn't really complex enough. But again, these are quite short books, and I enjoyed listening to the audiobooks. And yeah, there's not many books where I'll just listen to a whole book again straight away. I'll go back and like start reading the book immediately. I think that's a sign of an interesting book rather than just the sign of an amazing book. And I think this is an interesting fantasy series, which I would recommend, but again, if you're not into riddling your way through stuff and having to read stuff a few times to make sure that you've got the hang of it, again, I looked at some of these reviews and they're like, oh, I tried reading this book years ago and never really got into it. I was confused by page 20 and gave up, but now I've read the whole series. And I think if you're not the kind of person who is going to be like just getting your way through a book and then finding the rewardingness in the riddliness of it, probably not the book for you, but I would recommend it. So I'm going to give this book 4 stars and the overall series. This is kind of a 4-star series for me. Again, the story would have to be stronger for it to boost up that high, and the characters a little bit more, well, they're not flat characters, but just sort of like, if I'm going to spend 3 books or 2 books with a character, I want them to be maybe a little bit less whiny and a little bit less goody-goody two-shoes. I'm not sure. It's a tricky thing to to riddle my way around. Anyway, that's it for my review. You can... Oh, actually, normally I would go over to Goodreads and see what listeners of this podcast rate this. Chris rated it 5 stars, Jonathan rated it 4 stars, Preston 3 stars, and lots of other people marked it as to read. Richard Reed marked it as to read. Jenny Reading NV added it to read. Oh no, she added it as sci-fi fantasy read long ago. But Otto and Carl and Linguana and Keith all added it as to read over the years. But yeah, no full reviews. But yeah, go to Goodreads, become my friend on Goodreads, and I can also see what you're reading. And it's a great way to suggest books for me to read, including... Excuse me. Some people went on to the books I would like to see reviewed thread on the SFBRP listener group, which you should sign up for. And someone said, hey, you should read this book. And someone else said, yes, I think you should read that book. And a third person said, yeah, I want you to read that book as well. So I'm going to be reading next up, or I won't be reviewing it next, but I'm going to start it soon. The Library at Mount Char by Scott Hawkins. And a few, I had no idea what it's about. I guess it's about a library or something. But like 3 different people said, hey, this book is a crazy book. I think you'll enjoy it. And so that is the next book. So if you want me to read a book, the best way to do it is to get over to Goodreads, the SFBRP listener group, and suggest it there. And if other people back up your suggestions, I will get to it. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge there. You can follow me on YouTube and see my vlogging. I recently got back from the European Juggling Convention. That's why there's not been an episode for a few weeks, because I've been traveling to the European Juggling Convention and some other festivals, which is the European Juggling Convention is the biggest juggling festival every year, this time in the Azores, which are in the middle of the Atlantic, which I visited a few times at this time, not on a cruise ship. I actually just flew there and back, and I won the European Juggling Convention Fight Night Combat Tournament, which is something I've entered for the last 14 years, and I've been in 7 finals, and I finally beat it, which means nothing to anyone, but you can wish me a congratulations for something I've literally been trying to win for the last 14 years. Anyway, that's it. Oh, yeah, and on Instagram, you can follow me on Instagram, too. I'm Luke Burridge there. And I think that's about it. Email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got any questions or anything like that. If you're a book promoter or publisher or author, don't bother emailing me. Unless you're an author or you're promoting an author that I've already given 4-star reviews to in the past, I'm not really interested in free books or anything like that. Anyway, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.